A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about that moment when you tap send to pipeline on a train entering a tunnel. The app doesn't error. It just waits. And when you emerge, the message arrives as if nothing happened. He wants to know what actually happens across the front end, browser, OS, and back end to make that reliable for tiny payloads. A few kilobytes of text to a webhook. And he's drawing a sharp distinction between this lightweight pattern and full offline first architectures with gigabytes of media. Where does the boundary actually lie?
This is one of those problems that looks trivial until you've built it twice and discovered six different ways it breaks. The scope Daniel's setting is important. We're talking about a text prompt to an automation pipeline, maybe 2 kilobytes. Not video uploads, not offline maps, not a content store. Just save this tiny thing and send it when you can.
Which makes it a deceptively narrow problem because you don't need conflict resolution or storage quotas or resumable chunk transfers. But you still need every link in the chain to hold.
And the chain has 4 phases. Detect that you're offline, queue the request locally, retry when connectivity returns, and deduplicate on the back end so retries don't create doubles. Each phase has traps that aren't obvious on a first pass.
Let's start with the first trap, because it's the one that tricks every junior developer. How does the browser actually know you're offline?
Navigator.online. And it lies.
That's a strong claim.
It's a well-documented weakness. Navigator.online returns true if the device has a network interface. Wi-Fi is connected, cellular data is on. It does not mean your server is reachable. You can be on a captive portal, behind a misconfigured VPN, on a network that blocks your domain, or in one of those maddening situations where Wi-Fi says connected but the upstream is dead. The browser has no idea whether your specific API endpoint is reachable. It just knows the network card has an IP address.
The real signal isn't a property you can pull. It's a failed fetch.
And you have to distinguish what kind of failure. A type error : failed to fetch. That's a network error. The request never left the device, or it left and nothing came back. That's the one you queue and retry. A 400 response. Bad request, validation error. That's a bug in your code or the user's input. Retrying it 5 times won't fix it. A 500 or 503 server error. That might be retryable with backoff because the server could recover. But you don't want to hammer a dying server. And a 429, rate limited, definitely retryable, but you'd better back off.
Step 1 is a fetch that fails with a network error, and you need to catch that specifically. What do you do with it?
You store it. And where you store it determines whether it survives a tab close, a refresh, a device restart. There's a hierarchy. In-memory queue, a JavaScript array, fastest, simplest, gone the moment the tab closes. Session storage, survives a page refresh, gone when the tab closes. Local storage, survives tab close. 5 to 10 megabyte limit, but it's synchronous and blocks the main thread, and it's not accessible from a service worker. Indexed DB, asynchronous, survives everything including device restart, accessible from service workers, and the storage quota is generous, typically around 50% of available disk space capped at several gigabytes depending on the browser.
For a 2 kilobyte text payload, that quota is irrelevant. The reason you'd pick Indexed DB isn't capacity, it's that the service worker can reach it.
That's the key architectural decision. If you want the retry to happen even when the user has closed the tab, you need a service worker. The service worker lives outside any individual page. It's a shared background process that can wake up and handle a sync event. The canonical pattern documented in the web.dev offline forms article is this. Your page registers a service worker. When a fetch fails with a network error, the page sends a message to the service worker with the payload and an idempotency key. The service worker stores it in indexed DB and registers a background sync event. The browser, not your code, decides when to fire that sync event, typically when it detects connectivity has returned. The service worker's sync handler pulls items from IndexedDB, retries the fetch, and on success, deletes them.
This is where browser support gets interesting.
As of mid-2026, the background sync API is supported in Chrome, Edge, and Opera. Anything Chromium-based, Firefox and Safari do not support it. That's a critical gap. If you're building for the whole web, you can't rely on background sync alone.
What's the fallback?
You listen for the online event on the window object, and you run a periodic health check ping, a set interval that hits a lightweight endpoint on your server. When the browser fires online and your ping succeeds, you drain the queue. It's less battery friendly than background sync because you're polling, and it only works while the tab is open, but it works everywhere. The service worker pattern is progressive enhancement. If background sync is available, you get tab independent retry. If not, you get retry as long as the tab stays open.
Let's talk about what's actually in the queue. Each item isn't just a blob of text.
Each queued item needs at minimum an idempotency key, a UUID version 4, generated when the user first loads the form, not when they submit. The payload itself. A retry count starting at 0 with a max of, say, 5. And a status, pending, sending, or failed. If it hits max retries, it moves to a dead letter queue that the user can see and manually retry or discard.
Why generate the idempotency key on form mount rather than on submit?
Because if you generate it on submit, and the submit fails, and the user resubmits, you've got two different keys for the same logical action. The backend can't deduplicate them. The key needs to be stable for that submission intent. Mount the form, generate the key, attach it to that attempt. If they refresh the page, new mount, new key, new intent, that's correct behavior.
The UI needs to reflect all of this without confusing the user.
The UI feedback loop is underappreciated. You submit, the request queues, show a clock icon or a subtle pending badge. Don't clear the form. The text stays right where the user typed it, because until the backend acknowledges receipt, that data isn't safely delivered. When the retry succeeds, animate the clock to a check mark, then clear the form. If it fails permanently after max retries, show an error state with a retry button. Never optimistic. Clear the form on a network error. That's how you lose user data.
The form is the source of truth, until the server confirms otherwise.
That's exactly the mental model. All right, we've covered the front-end storage and detection, but storing a request is useless if the back-end can't safely handle retries. Let's flip to the server side.
This is the part where Stripe enters the conversation.
Stripe's idempotency pattern is the gold standard. They published a blog post on it that's essentially required reading. Here's how it works. The front-end sends the idempotency key in a header, idempotency, key colon, that UUID. The back-end receives the request. It checks a store, typically Redis or a database table, for that key. If the key isn't there, it processes the request, stores the key with the response and a TTL of 24 hours, and returns the response. If the key is there, it returns the cached response without processing anything.
The dangerous scenario is the request reaches the server. The server processes it. The server sends a 200 OK, and the network drops before the 200 reaches the client. The client sees a network error and queues a retry. Without idempotency, the server processes it again, and you get a duplicate. With idempotency, the server sees the key, returns the cache 200, and nothing is duplicated.
That's the single most important back-end pattern for making retries safe. And the TTL matters. You don't want to store idempotency keys forever. 24 hours is standard. After that, a retry with the same key would be treated as new, but by then the user has either succeeded or given up.
What about errors that aren't network drops? The server might reject the request for reasons that won't change on retry.
The queue needs to distinguish retryable from non-retryable errors. 429 rate limit, retry with backoff. 500 or 503 server error, retry with backoff. 401 authentication expired, do not retry, surface to the user immediately because no amount of waiting will fix an expired token. 400 validation error, do not retry, surface to the user because the payload itself is bad. If you blindly retry a 400, you're just spamming your own server with a malformed request.
The backoff strategy.
Exponential backoff with jitter. Start at 1 second, double each retry, cap at 30 seconds. add plus or minus 20% randomness, jitter, so that if you have 1,000 clients all retrying at the same time, they don't synchronize into a thundering herd that crushes your server. Background Sync handles this automatically in Chromium. If you're building the fallback with set interval and the online event, you have to implement the backoff yourself.
We've built the happy path. Now let's break it. What are the failure modes that turn a simple queue into a debugging nightmare?
I count at least 5 that catch people. First, the browser says online, but the server is unreachable. We covered that, solved by the health check ping rather than trusting navigator.online. Second, the user edits or deletes the pending item before it's delivered. Your queue needs to support mutation, delete, by idempotency key. If the user changes their mind and edits the text, you update the queued payload and reset the retry count, because it's a new logical submission.
Third one, authentication expires while the item is queued.
This is a real problem, especially on mobile where the user might be offline for hours. Your options are store a refresh token and attempt a token refresh before retrying the queued request, or surface an auth error to the user and let them re-authenticate. Option 1 is smoother but more complex. Option 2 is simpler but interrupts the user. Pick based on your tolerance for complexity.
Fourth, multiple tabs.
If the user has your app open in 2 tabs and submits in both, you could get duplicate queues competing. This is solved by making the service worker the single queue owner. All tabs post messages to the same service worker, which maintains one queue in IndexedDB. The service worker is shared across all tabs for the same origin.
Fifth, the operating system suspends the app before a retry can occur.
On mobile, this is common. The user switches apps, the OS freezes your tab or your app. A service worker gets a limited execution window when a sync event fires. The browser gives it a few seconds to complete. If it doesn't finish, the browser may retry the sync event later, but if you're relying on a main thread JavaScript interval in a backgrounded tab, the OS will throttle or suspend it. This is why the service worker pattern matters. It's the only way to get guaranteed execution time after the user has moved on.
What about the OS clearing storage? iOS is notorious for this.
IndexedDB is classified as best effort storage on some platforms. If the device is low on space, the OS can clear it without warning. For a text prompt queue, the data loss is annoying but not catastrophic. The user can retype. For a full offline content store with gigabytes of media, this is a much bigger problem. Which brings us to the distinction Daniel asked about. Is this lightweight queue the same engineering problem as full offline first?
My instinct is that they share a family resemblance but diverge on every implementation detail.
They share the abstraction of save locally, sync later. But that's where the similarity ends. A lightweight queue for text prompts is a single atomic mutation. One create operation, no editing conflicts, no storage quotas to worry about, no resumable transfers, no eviction policies. Full offline first is a completely different beast. You need conflict resolution, CRDTs or operational transforms, because the user might edit the same document on 2 devices while offline. You need storage quotas because IndexedDB can eat half the user's disk. You need eviction policies because you can't keep everything forever. You need resumable chunked uploads because you're syncing video files that are hundreds of megabytes. You need differential sync because you don't want to re-upload an entire document when one paragraph changed.
The boundary is at single atomic mutation versus stateful local replica.
That's the cleanest line. If your offline action is create one thing, a text prompt, a form submission, a like, a comment, you're in lightweight queue territory. The moment the user can edit that thing offline, or multiple users can modify the same data offline, or the payloads exceed a few megabytes, you've crossed into offline first territory, and the engineering complexity jumps by an order of magnitude.
What about the middle ground Daniel mentioned? A durable offline mutation queue. Where does that sit?
A durable mutation queue is the bridge. It's a lightweight queue that's been hardened. It survives tab close, device restart, app kill. It handles multiple pending actions with ordering guarantees. But it still deals in atomic mutations, not stateful replicas. Think of it as the lightweight pattern with production-grade durability. You'd use IndexedDB, a service worker, idempotency keys, and a dead letter queue. But you wouldn't add CRDTs or storage eviction. It's the same pattern, just built to survive more failure pattern.
Let's make this concrete. Daniel asked about specific frameworks. What does this look like in React versus Vue versus Flutter versus plain HTML?
In React or Next.js, you'd typically use a library like SWR or TanStack Query for data fetching, and their mutation retry mechanisms can handle some of this. But neither handles offline queuing natively, you'd still need a service worker and IndexedDB for the actual queue. The React layer manages the UI state, pending, sent, failed, and post messages to the service worker. In Vue, you'd use Pinia for state management with an offline queue plugin that wraps IndexedDB. In Svelte, a custom store with IndexedDB persistence, Svelte's reactivity model makes this surprisingly clean. In Angular, an HTTP interceptor that catches network errors and routes them to a queue service. In React Native, you'd use NetInfo for connectivity detection and a library like React Native Queue for persistence. In Flutter, connectivity_plus for network detection, Hive for local storage, and a background isolate for processing the queue.
For a conventional server-rendered app, no JavaScript framework, just form actions.
The form works without JavaScript. It submits normally, and if the network is down, the browser shows its native error. Then you layer on JavaScript that intercepts the form submission, catches network errors, and queues to a service worker. If JavaScript fails to load or the browser doesn't support service workers, the form still works. It just doesn't have the offline queue. This is the most resilient pattern.
Are there established libraries that handle all of this, or is it custom logic?
Workbox from the Chrome team provides a background sync module that wraps the background sync API with IndexedDB storage. It handles a lot of the boilerplate, registering sync events, storing in IndexedDB, replaying the queue. But it doesn't handle the backend IDEM potency, the UI state management, or the framework integration. You're still writing custom logic to tie it all together. There's no single library that says, give me a form and I'll make it offline, reliable. It's a composition of patterns.
Let's assemble the simplest robust implementation. Daniel asks for the checklist.
1. Generate the UUID v4 IDEM potency key when the form mounts. 2. On submit, attempt the fetch with that key in the IDEM potency key header. 3. On network error specifically, not server error, store the payload and key in IndexedDB via a service worker. 4. Register a background sync event if the API is available. 5. In the sync handler, attempt the fetch with the stored key. 6. On success, delete the item from IndexedDB. 7. On failure, increment the retry count and re-register the sync. 8. After 5 retries, surface the failure to the user. 9. On the backend, check the IDEM potency key against Redis with a 24-hour TTL and return the cached response on duplicate.
That's the pattern. And when should someone escalate beyond it?
Add conflict resolution when users can edit the same item offline. Add storage quotas when payloads exceed about 100 kilobytes. Add resumable transfers when payloads exceed 10 megabytes. Add CRDTs when multiple users can modify the same data offline. Until you hit one of those thresholds, the lightweight queue is sufficient. Don't build a full offline-first architecture for a text prompt. That's the mistake I see teams make. They hear offline and reach for the heaviest solution.
The engineering equivalent of using a flamethrower to light a candle.
You burn down the sprint in the process. The idempotency key pattern is the highest leverage change. If you do nothing else, add idempotency keys to your backend. That alone makes retries safe, even if your queue is just an in-memory array that dies on tab close. Then, add the service worker queue when you need durability.
The lightweight queue and the full offline content store, they're not the same spectrum. They're different problems that happen to share a few mechanisms.
They share idempotency keys, retry queues, network detection, and local storage. They diverge on conflict resolution, storage quotas, eviction policies, resumable transfers, media transcoding, and differential sync. The shared components are the easy parts. The divergent components are where the engineering cost lives. If you're building a note-taking app with offline editing and multi-device sync, you're in the deep end. If you're building send this text to a webhook when I have signal, you're in the shallow end. Both are valid. Just know which one you're swimming in.
There's an open question I keep coming back to. Background sync is Chromium only. If Safari and Firefox eventually adopt it, or if something like WebPush with service workers becomes the universal primitive, does this lightweight queue pattern become a browser default? Something the platform just handles?
I think it trends that way. The line between online and offline is already blurring. The most reliable apps treat connectivity as a spectrum, not a binary. The browser providing a built-in retry this fetch when possible, primitive feels inevitable. Until then, we're assembling it from service workers and IndexedDB and idempotency keys.
The practical takeaway for anyone listening. Audit your current form submissions. Do they survive a tab close? A device restart? A lost 200 acknowledgement? If the answer is no to any of those, start with the idempotency key. That's the foundation everything else builds on.
Then add the service worker queue. Don't jump to offline first. Solve the problem you actually have.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
During the Cold War, a unique sign language dialect emerged among workers at a pigment factory in the Chatham Islands, where color names were signed by mimicking the grinding motion specific to each mineral. Cobalt blue used a circular wrist grind, while red ochre was a sharp downward strike. The dialect died out by 1972 when the factory closed and no deaf children had learned it natively.
A pigment factory sign language on a remote island. That is aggressively specific.
The grinding motion for cobalt blue. I have questions about workplace safety in that factory.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumintop. If you enjoyed this episode, rate the show wherever you listen. Next time, we're tackling how streaming databases actually work, which is going to be a whole different kind of fun. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. See you then.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.